Culture Clash on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Culture Clash with me, Juggy.
And me, Tamvi.
We are back and yeah, we're excited for this episode because we are going to be talking everything weddings. But Culture Clash is our series where we take a look at the melting pot of British society and the culture clashes that can arise or the similarities that can occur. So we aim to have fun, honest chats about being young. I like to say that, young.
Yeah,
there we go. We're going to stick with that. Yeah. British, but also holding on to our cultural values and beliefs. So I'm Juggy. I'm a producer, filmmaker and presenter. And yeah, I'm Sikh Punjabi. So Tanvi?
Yeah, I'm Tanvi. I am a content creator and a presenter. And I am Jane, but I'm also Indian. So whilst we're both Indian, we come from different states and we're different religions. So it's such a good conversation to have. And today we are talking all things weddings. And this is quite possibly my favourite thing to talk about. I could talk about it for days. And I think weddings is such an interesting topic to talk about because no matter where you come from, no matter what religion or culture you are, at some point in your life, you've either attended a wedding or you've planned a wedding or you're planning on getting married yourself. So excited to get into this one.
Yes, yes. And we're going to have different segments throughout the show. So we're going to be talking to a wedding planner, Assumpta Victor, which I'm really excited about. She specializes in multicultural weddings.
Yeah, such a niche topic. But I feel like now more than ever, having a wedding planner focusing on multicultural weddings, so important.
And who is our Culture Clash guest?
Yeah, so for Culture Clash today, we've got my really good friend, Gabriel. He's a finance content creator, but he's also Jewish. And he got married last year and has also spent his entire summer attending Jewish weddings. So he's going to have a lot to say about weddings.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited. Today's going to be so fun and so exciting.
Right, so let's start with our first segment.
So we always like to kick off the show with our news segment. And this is always talking about several stories that have been making the news or pop culture scene. And we will take a look at them from our perspective, which is a South Asian perspective. So what I want to talk about today is kind of like launching a relationship online, okay? Recent months on TikTok, I've seen so many people kind of soft launch, then slowly moving on to a hard launch. And that basically is when you're kind of launching your partner online from the perspective of an influencer, because it's an interesting topic, okay? Take away social media. As a South Asian Indian woman, traditionally, we wouldn't introduce a boyfriend to our family unless we had the intention of like putting a ring on that finger, right?
Yeah.
But obviously the world has changed a lot now. And I myself, I'm in a new relationship and I've been kind of navigating that dynamic of like soft launching him. I kind of skiffed the soft launch and I just went straight to a hard launch because I was like, look, I'm just going to put it out there. And I just put
So can you just differentiate soft launch and hard launch?
Okay, so you know the soft launch is kind of like when you're at dinner and you're taking a picture of the food, but like, you know, his hands on the table.
Oh, okay, so everyone knows you're taken.
Yeah, or like, you know, when you're taking a selfie, there's like an arm round you.
Right.
Like, it's very subtle hints that you have a partner.
Right.
Whereas a hard launch is like, get him on a TikTok and you are together, seen, they can see his face, everything.
And when you're actually on the grid,
exactly,
right?
He has made it to the feed post on Instagram. So I kind of skipped the soft launch just because I thought, do you know what? I am a lifestyle content creator. I have a very personal relationship with my audience and I thought it's just a nice time to put him out there.
But let's break this down though. I'm coming from my background. Like you mentioned earlier, we don't usually tell our families we're in relationships. My family's like kind of, you know, on the verge of modern, but also old school as well. So that's something that we don't do. What's your family situation? Are they more modern approach to that? Do they know about the partner?
And yeah, well, if they didn't know, they'd know now. No, but
hard launch to everyone.
Pretty much. My family are pretty modern and I'm really lucky, but it was really important to me that, you know, he met my family and my really close friends before it was public, because of the audience I have, in overnight, like, you know, thousands of people could know about him, and I wanted to respect the fact that I would rather he meet my brother and my parents before finding out through social media.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, and it would be nice, right? My brother would be like, who on earth is this? So no, we both made the time to get to know each other's families for a while before posting anything about it online. And also, because you know when you make someone like Facebook official or whatever, you know, you want to make sure that you know they're the one. Because, like, say, you know, months down the line or years down the line, you break up.
So, obviously, we come from a very superstitious culture, right? And
everything's,
you're putting it out there, nuzzard, which is like black magic. You know, if you put something out there, everyone's like, oh, you know, if
like
it doesn't last,
alive,
it's because
right?
of, it's because of that. So, didn't that put more pressure on everything?
Do you know what? The first ever TikTok I made about my relationship was it was a soft-ish launch, and it was like, I really want to hard launch my man, but I'm scared of Nuzzer. And that went absolutely viral. And that's because, like, it's that theory where if something good is going for you, you shouldn't share
it. Yeah,
which
is
bad. People
who
are jealous will, like, curse it or jinx it, and then something bad will happen. But at the end of the day, like, if it makes me happy and I'm confident in my relationship, I think I was at the point where I was happy to share it online. But yeah, you have to be at a point where you believe in it, because, like, yeah, last week there was a huge TikToker, 7 million followers. She's been with her boyfriend for 8 years. So Anna Paul, a lot of people know, she's Australian. And they broke up this week. And I feel like she's going through like a public breakup. Now, and their breakup seems really healthy and really like mature.
Is it though?
Is it behind the scenes? I don't know. But so many times we see this, right? When content creators become like TikTok couples and they start creating content
with
their
other half. Did they do that joint statement?
Well,
we're going to remain
their
friends.
Well, they put that little story on. Yeah. Like, there's no bad blood between us. Again, the scary thing about putting someone online is that if you break up, you're then going to have to go through that public breakup with millions of opinions about it. Of like, oh, he probably cheated, she cheated, or, you know, he was not good enough for her, or she can do better. And again, that makes the whole
also when they're
so
both are they both influencers? These?
Well, no, so she is,
yeah, okay.
And he became one through her because 8 years, and she's so big that, like, you know, people really saw him as well.
She's kind of responsible for his career.
She's launched, yeah, she should take credit for that for sure. She commissioned through all those brand deals. But I mean, I think that's the other scary thing you've got to think about when you're putting something out there online when it comes to relationship, is that it comes with the risk of then having to go through the breakup online as well.
But that's the whole thing of just living, right? At the time you're with your partner, you're not going to think about, oh, it's not going to last. You want to go with the flow. You want to go with your feelings. You want to just live in the moment, right? And go, this is us. You know, don't know what's going to happen down the line, but this is us right now. And that is your job, you know, essentially sharing. You know, you're one of the only kind of South Asians that is quite modern and shares about the date in life. You know, everything else, they only kind of announce it once they're, you know, engaged, like we said, or, you know, they do the hard launch then, right?
Yes.
And you just see the engagement picture up or the wedding picture, you're like, oh, you had a partner this whole time.
I know, and I for so long, so I only really shared him like months in, and I always used to tell him, like, I'm kind of struggling because I'm so open with my audience and I love that they know like all these different elements about my life. But I feel like I'm lying to them to an extent because I'm not sharing such a big part of my life openly with them. So again, for me, it was kind of navigating that of like, how do I create a really open and honest relationship with my audience, but also protect my boundaries as well. So like, that's something I had to deal with.
Yeah, this must be a hard struggle for all influencers,
it,
right?
It is. But at the same time, there's people out there who are in these kind of influencer couples who I can tell you for a fact, like, it's not real.
Oh, really?
It's fake. 100%.
Spill.
I think, no, like, I think there's also this element where, like we said earlier, there's also this element of when you're in a couple and you share that online, people are so nosy that the engagement goes up, the views go up, the likes go up, which is great if you're an influencer because that means more brand deals, more payments. And so I do also think there's this whole other side to it where people are literally in relationships because it does well on social media.
Make that money. Go make that money.
Make
Why
that
not?
Money. But at the same time, I feel like if it's not a real relationship and you're so unhappy and you're not even together or you're just stunting for like social media, that's a problem. And I think things like Love Island as well, like people do that, they stay together longer or they'll like fake their relationship when they literally don't even speak just because it does well from a PR perspective.
Do you know what? I got into this series towards the end, right? I was sick and I was just binge watching it. I actually believe, I want to believe in some of them. I get why people get invested,
and
you know?
Absolutely.
I'm like, no, don't split up.
I think a lot of people are probably still together, but at the same time, there's probably people that are not 100% happy or it's not 100% authentic, but it's doing well for their career. So why would they not?
Okay, so let's just wrap this up. Are you happy that you chose to go down the hard launch route?
Yeah, I'm happy now, but you're going to have to ask me again in like a year to see if it was like a regret.
No, it won't be. It won't be. No, none of that. But no, it's really good to just put ourselves out there. And I think the fact that you're open, honest, and that's quite a role model for other South Asians to go, oh, do you know what? It's not that bad.
Just own it.
Yeah, own it. And then as long as you know, you've got the respect of your family and you're telling them like you did, you approached it kind of really sensitively, you've done that and then go, look, this is what I'm going to do now. And you've still kind of done it in a subtle, it's not like, you know, right there. I don't think it is on your grid, right?
You've not been sliding through those carousels long enough.
No, hidden. You're hidden, right? You're hidden it. I like it. Just, you know, sandwiched in there.
No, but I do think it's important to show that, you know, as a South Asian woman, I don't need to hide my relationship until there's a ring on my finger. Like, dating someone, being in a relationship with someone, there's ups and downs. You know, there's a lot to learn. You can make mistakes. And I think it's important to have role models that are sharing that online. Like, it's normal to be in a relationship. It's normal to argue. It's normal to travel before you're married. It's normal to move in together before you get married. Like, all these things are things I want to normalize.
Yeah, you know, and it's changing. It's changing times now. And people like that in the public eye that are doing that, that kind of allows for other people. But also, it gives your partner the pressure, the countdown to put that ring on that finger.
Oh, no. I'm like, there's no rush on my end. I think we're really good at kind of having those conversations with each other and only doing things when they're right. So that's the other thing. If you're going to launch someone, make sure they're comfortable with it and it's not going to cause issues in your relationship.
Well, there we go. There we have it. The wise words from Tambi there. Wise
yeah,
words.
Yeah, take notes.
So we are doing our versus segment. Every week we pick a question that relates to the main topic of the episode, which today is weddings, even though I'm not sure either me and Tambi are even close to that part of our lives yet. But we offer our opinions on the topic and then speak to an expert about their views on the question. So Tambi, are you ready?
I'm ready and I love weddings, so I can't wait to get into this topic.
There you go. This time we're looking at weddings, and the versus question is big wedding or small wedding. Now, what team are you on?
I'm 100%, hands down, without a question, small wedding.
Okay, why?
Yeah, I feel like as a kid, everyone always thought, you know, I would want that big Indian wedding. But like, as the years have gone on, I've seen how long and tiring it is to plan a wedding. So like, the smaller it is, the easier. The financial cost, like, I am a finance girl, okay?
Yeah,
so
you are.
Like, I know how much a big wedding costs. I would rather just put that money towards something else, in my opinion. So I think having a small wedding where I only invite people who I actually know, who I actually speak to, is the way I want to go.
But Tammy, you are Indian, right?
And
with that comes a big old guest list, right? For my sister's wedding, she had 500 people there.
Yeah, and that's not even that big. Like, I've been to a wedding in Kenya, which was 4,000 people. And that's the norm out there.
How do you know 4,000 people?
Because it becomes like family, then family, friends, extended family, like your parents, business partners, and then it basically just becomes the whole country. So it as Indians, I think you're right. Like, we have such big families that naturally our weddings are huge. So yeah, that's a bridge I'm definitely going to have to cross. Like, what side are you on?
So I am big weddings, because I think, do you know what, in my head, you only want to do it once.
Yeah,
you want all your
hopefully.
Friends. Yeah. Fingers crossed, you know, this day and age, you don't know, but you only want to do it once and you want to go big and you want to just celebrate the day, right?
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I do get the stuff about costs. Like, it does creep up, and then you get the odd table of people that are just there to show face
for
and
the
they
food,
leave.
For the free food. I don't want to be paying £100 per head for someone to have a free meal when I've never spoken to them in my life.
And then on the camera, they're just the moody people that don't dance,
no,
don't congratulate.
The aunties.
Yeah. But we have a guest joining us now. So we got Assumpta Victu on the line, and she's a wedding planner and founder of Ave Creations. Assumpta, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, we're all good. So as you can hear, we're getting into it. You know, our versus segment, we're talking about weddings, which is your speciality. Now, are you team big wedding or team small wedding?
Oh, I'm team small wedding, even though I had a big wedding, but that's because of family.
But okay, tell us about that though. What was the number of people? Like, what was the wedding like?
Okay, so my heritage is Nigerian and my husband is Romanian.
Right.
And we had two weddings. So our first wedding was a traditional Nigerian wedding. 450 people.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just laughing. Yes, 450 people. And then our more Western wedding in Nigeria, we call it a white wedding, on a different day was 350 people for a sit-down meal.
So I mean, was it the same? Big. Yeah, was it the same people though? Like, did you, or was it just two different lots of people?
No, I mean, for the most part it was, but some people were invited to the traditional wedding that weren't invited to the other one.
Hey, okay, yeah. that is a big number. We're gonna
it's a huge number, especially because even long before I met my husband, I'd been telling my parents, I want a small wedding, because I know what Nigerian weddings are like. I know I'm the only daughter of a well-loved Nigerian couple, and they go to millions of weddings, and I was like, this can't happen at mine, and it did.
I mean, at that point, it almost becomes like you're doing the wedding for your parents and your family. And I mean, I'm curious, no, like, did you enjoy it? Did you actually kind of be present in the moment, or was it just stressful for you?
I planned both of my weddings actually, but it was before I had my planning business, and I did enjoy it in the end. Right up, I actually really enjoyed the planning right up until maybe the last month and a half. I planned both of them in 7 months, so I did it quite quickly.
Oh my gosh.
The last month and a half was so stressful, so so incredibly life alteringly stressful. But the actual day, particularly our like Western wedding, probably the best party I've been to in my life. It was actually really good.
Really?
I love that for
you. I didn't think I'd enjoy it as much as I did given the stress, but no, it was really, really good. But immediately after it was done, I just kept thinking, or even towards the end of the planning, I just kept thinking, well, it's fine. I'll have a vow renewal and I'll do what I want.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good plan. That's a good plan down the line. And obviously two cultures mixing there, uniting. Did you include like a bit of cultural elements from both sides in there?
We did. My husband's culture, I mean, there's not a lot that you can do, but the things that you would normally do in Romanian culture tend to be done more in like the villages, and he's from a city.
Right.
So they don't necessarily incorporate that much of their culture. So for example, at our traditional Nigerian wedding, I wanted us to change into Romanian clothing, but he was like, no one wears that unless you're like from the village. I'm like, oh man, that would have been so cool. So we did incorporate like a bread ceremony, which is common in Romania. We did that as part of like adding his culture in, and a couple of songs as well, like with music, but not necessarily with the food though.
Stuff like that's nice for the guests, isn't it? To experience each other's like little different cultures and little quirks. But tell us about your job as a wedding planner with Ave Creations.
Ave Creations is my baby, I'd say. And my job is really fun. Also, I discovered about 2 years ago that wedding planning is consistently in the top 10 most stressful jobs in the world. And I can 100% believe that. Because people put so much pressure on, you know, the day being the best day of their lives. And so it can get a bit stressful, more so for me, because my niche is fusion weddings and multicultural weddings. And with that comes quite a lot of family involvement. When I speak to some of my other planner friends who maybe plan like English weddings, not to say that those aren't stressful, but they don't always have the family dynamics that I have to deal with, especially when you're fusing two very big cultures, for example. Like if you were to fuse a Nigerian wedding or Nigerian culture with any other culture, it can be quite overwhelming and overbearing. So just managing personalities, managing expectations. Similarly with my own wedding, what the bride and groom want or the couple want versus what their families want, and just trying to find a happy compromise and medium so that everybody has a great time.
Yeah, no, 100%. And obviously, did you start this before you met your partner? Because obviously this is a special, you know, this is a special niche, isn't it, in terms of wedding planning? So
I knew when I was at uni that I wanted to be a wedding planner. I studied law actually, and I knew when I was studying that I always wanted to be a wedding planner, but it was like a somewhere down the line sort of thing. And even though I'd helped some friends with their weddings, and my birthdays were always like way more extra than anybody else's, so it wasn't a surprise to my friends when I became a wedding planner. It wasn't until after our wedding that people that were there were like, if this isn't a business, it should be. So that kind of gave me the confidence boost to be like, okay, cool, I can do this now. And then my niche just sort of happened. I didn't start off saying I was a multicultural wedding planner. I just, a more seasoned planner saw my weddings and was like, has it ever occurred to you that like, this is your niche? And also with your experience, your personal experience, you could really like fuse cultures, because there was no one at the time saying that that's what they did. And so now most of my couples are never from the same place. So it's really nice to be able to find creative ways of incorporating both of their cultures into their weddings and making it all about them, showcasing their personalities. Because so many weddings can be like really cookie cutter. And that's no disrespect to anybody that wants that. But my goal is always for your friends and family to walk in and be like, yeah, this is very them.
But do you get to enjoy the weddings then? Because obviously sometimes you're taken into different cultures when you plan it. Do you get to take the food, and or is it just a busy day?
A combination of both. It's a busy day, but it's always enjoyable because I make it so. I want to have a good time while I'm working. I want the suppliers that I'm working with to have a good time, because then everybody produces their best work. So I do make sure everybody gets to eat, and we try things, and we enjoy music from the different cultures, all sorts of things. I I attack planning from a multi-sensory perspective. So what are we going to smell? What are we going to touch? What do we taste? All those different things. And yeah, I try to enjoy it as much as possible.
You're literally making me want to become a wedding planner now. Like,
it sounds
like such a fun job. And I also think like your niche of bringing, you know, different cultures together is genius, because I myself, like, I've seen it happen more and more regularly over the last few years. Like, I've got family members that are branching out into different ethnicities, and I think it's great. But you're right, there's so many different variables and people and cultural and religious aspects that you've got to bring into it. So like, what kind of piece of advice would you give to someone who is in that position, is looking to marry someone from a different faith or ethnicity, and like, how can they manage like different family expectations and opinions, and just what's the best piece of advice you can give to navigate that?
I'd say be realistic, and also you're going to have to compromise. Choose the things like that are your non-negotiables. Like, these are the top three things, come hell or high water, we have to have these, whether it's what you're wearing or the music or the food. And then the other things you can concede on. I'm not saying just let your friends and family walk all over you, because you're not going to enjoy the day, especially if a large chunk of the money is coming from you. If a large chunk of the money is coming from parents, then I think you can be a bit more strict and you can put your foot down within reason. You want to be respectful and still maintain a relationship with your parents, hopefully, if they're not toxic, after the wedding. But I always say, like, when you're fusing cultures, you cannot have everything. You can't have every element from your culture and every element from theirs. It would just make it too much for both of you and for your families. It would be too confusing. So maybe if you're not that familiar with what you're supposed to do, speak to uncles, aunties, parents, if they're around, and say, okay, what are the top two things or top three things that we have to include, whether it is the clothing or the food or a particular ritual on both sides, and then see how that works together. Sometimes, even if it is a super important thing, if it's not going to work in the timeline, for example, if it's like a 3-hour ceremony, nobody wants to sit through that.
We have to.
Yeah, we kind of have to.
Yeah, so how can we truncate that? Which I did for one of my weddings earlier this year. It was, and they tried to fuse in a bit of the bride's Nigerian culture. So we sort of did this chopped Nigerian, well, specifically Yoruba ceremony in the evening, and everybody loved it. The groom's family, who is English, got to see what would happen. The MC explained what was happening. They got to throw dollars at them. It was so fun, but it wasn't, and they also changed. So it was a nice way to honor their cultures and then introduce it to the groom's family, because so much of the day was like really Western and really English. We wanted to add a little bit of her culture, and it just worked out really, really well.
Yeah, I can imagine as a bride, you never want to feel like you've lost like elements of your culture that are really important to you. So I think the non-negotiable tip is such a good tip. I think whether it's a multi-ethnic wedding or not, that's a really good tip just to please parents as well. I've got a hard question for you, but other than your own two weddings, what has been like the best or the most favourite wedding you've ever had to plan, if you have one?
I don't know if I should say what I do. I mean, I love all of my weddings for different reasons. But that wedding that I just mentioned to you, which is behind me, was so, so special. Like, it was one of those days where everything converged to make perfection. Wow. Because usually something's going to happen at an event when there are so many moving parts, and we just kind of roll with it and, you know, make sure that the day is lovely anyway. But in the UK, in the middle of May, the sun shone, you know, like every single thing
just fell into place.
And it was just one of those things that every person in the room was just like, oh my God, this is magic. This is incredible. The florals were amazing. The weather was great. All the different musical elements were so good. And we'd spent so much time thinking about the details and how everything was going to work together. And it just did. So,
I think you're going to be a perfect mediator for any Indian family to come to. Like, just everyone sitting there, you're kind of schooling them on this is how it's going to be. But look, thank you so much for your time. And where can everyone follow you?
Yes, you can. You can follow me at By Arve Creations on Instagram.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your
time. Thank you.
Thank you. And it's funny, I have 3 Indian weddings this year.
Oh, there you go.
Maybe we'll be at one of them. Who knows?
Yeah, you might see us in the crowd.
I'll see you later.
See you.
Thank you.
Bye.
So I think that was definitely team small weddings one.
Yeah, I'm inspired. I feel like I've taken away so many nuggets that I want to tell my parents when, if and when I ever get married. Just like, I think weddings can be stressful and ultimately you want them to be enjoyable. Yeah. So no, I think that brings us on like perfectly to our next segment, which is of course, Culture Clash. Now, Culture Clash is how we compare kind of how different cultures take on different things. Obviously, I am Jain and I am Indian and you are Sikh Punjabi. So even between our cultures, there are differences.
And we've both grown up in Britain. Exactly. So we've both got that mindset as well. We've grown up around that environment. Yeah. But then I think, you know, a lot of it weddings, but also kind of assumed to marry within culture, marry within religion, aren't we? So
yeah, exactly. And I think even the difference between having like a traditional Indian wedding in India versus having an Indian wedding in England, for example, there's so many differences. And I think as like second generation, third generation immigrants, we have our own way and we want to do things and be a bit more modern. And maybe there's alcohol there, maybe there's meat there. There's so many different things even within our cultures. But I feel like it's the perfect time to bring one of my really, really good friends on. His name is Gabriel, and I will let him introduce himself. But yeah, Gabriel's a really good friend of mine and he is Jewish, so I feel like it would be the perfect conversation to have and see kind of the differences between Indian weddings, Jewish weddings, if there's similarities. So Gabriel, have we got you on the line?
Let's hope this works. Can
it
you
does.
Hear me?
Yes,
we can.
It does.
Welcome.
Hey. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
This is so exciting, Gabriel, because Gabriel's a good friend of mine. I'll let you introduce yourself, but we've never actually spoken about weddings.
Okay.
So this is going to be fun.
Yes, it is going to be fun. Hopefully I've got something relevant to share, seeing as mine was less than a year ago.
Yeah, so tell us a bit about yourself before we get into your wedding. Like, tell us about your career, obviously how we've met, and we'll get into your wedding soon.
Of course, yes. Yeah. So I am, I suppose I would describe myself as a content creator within the finance niche. I talk about all things personal finance. I had my break, as you could call it, during COVID when most people decided to jump on social media. So about 2-3 years ago, I started creating on TikTok. People started to like what I was saying when it came to personal finance. I mean, it's clearly not a topic that's educated here in the UK. So that might resonate quite strongly with, you know, my fellow nationals here. So upon sharing that, it took about, honestly, a month to 6 months to grow to about 1 million followers, which was pretty mental on the platform. It was a pretty nuts journey. And obviously off the back of that, I've been able to leave my job at Barclays, which was a, you know, a really big and scary moment. And to make it slightly more relevant, in the same month that I left my job, I also moved house and got married, all in that same period.
A lot going on.
There you go. And that was about, that was a summer last year or September last year. And here we are 11 months down the line.
Alive. Down the line. You're alive one year into your marriage.
There you go.
I was going to say, I'm still alive 11 months down the line. That was the line.
Listen, they say the first year of marriage is the hardest. Can you confirm or deny that?
I haven't had the second year yet, so I don't know if it gets
easier. Fair.
Well, obviously, we are both Indian and you are Jewish, and I'd love to know just a bit about kind of your Jewish culture and specifically Jewish weddings, because I've never been to one, but I've seen lots through Instagram and they look so much fun. But obviously, there are different like kind of levels of how religious you are and different elements of the culture. So would love to know about Jewish weddings.
Yeah, of course. I feel like I should always put an asterisk at the beginning. There are so many different types of Judaism. You know, you've got ultra-Orthodox, modern Orthodox, which is kind of where I am, liberal, reform. So when I talk, I'm going to try and be specific to who I am. So hopefully I don't offend, you know, people from other sides. And of course, there's also different, you know, sizes, statures, depends on like, you know, your community and the areas you're in. But when it comes to kind of like the way that I was brought up, it's, you know, you don't live together until marriage. Mainly, obviously, there are some exceptions depending on how religious you are. But this was something that me and my wife did. So we only moved in together after getting married. And the wedding
quite
itself,
similar to us, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah, that's
yeah,
quite,
definitely
that is
similar.
An element that is quite similar. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind that, to be honest. We knew each other very, very well, so there were no real shocks or surprises. maybe she can say differently, to be honest, from moving in together. But the wedding itself, yeah, pretty nuts. I mean, we're such like close communities, but like we came kind of from the same community, but it's very much like we had 250 to 300 people at the wedding.
Is your partner of the same ethnicity and kind of culture?
Literally, and, yeah. We both went to the same Jewish primary school. Right. That's a nice little thing to kind of preface it with. Yeah, we've grown up 10 minutes away from each other. Right. Our families knew each other. They went to the same synagogue.
Oh, that's nice.
For any kind of like festivals and, you know, Sabbath and stuff like that. So we knew each other really well. We grew up as part of like also the same youth movements, you know, like summer camp, stuff like that. Same friendship groups. So we know each other really well.
and
two of
with
her
that,
best friends
Gabe,
married two of my best friends as well. So
no, that's amazing. Obviously, I know your story and I think it's insane how you went to the same primary school and then like reconnected later and eventually got married. I think
that
it's
is
so,
nice.
It restores my faith in romance.
That's wholesome as well, isn't
yeah,
it? There's something
really
very wholesome about that. Like.
Did you find that because you came from similar communities and backgrounds and kind of grew up quite similarly, that planning the wedding was seamless? Or did you still find that, you know, you still had some conflicts of like what different family members wanted? Or in terms of the cultural element of planning the wedding, were there any challenges you faced in that aspect?
No, so the cultural element, I mean, we probably had it easier than most, but I don't think there's ever wedding planning when everyone's exactly on the same wavelength. I mean, when it comes to like Jewish weddings, there are a lot of like religious aspects to it that you're always kind of trying to, you obviously want to adhere to all of the religious aspects, but you also want to make it your own personal thing and the way that you want it to like kind of look and feel. So we were mainly on the same wavelength, and also we're quite fortunate, especially in the culture and the community that I've grown up with, that parents are very heavily involved in the wedding planning. They also support in terms of obviously like paying for the wedding. I say obviously, that's not obvious, which is very fortunate. But on the flip side, that does mean that most likely I'm gonna have to pay for all of my kids' weddings as well, you know, half half with whoever they marry.
So, let's hope they go smaller. Let's hope they go smaller, right?
Yeah, let's go for like a nice 50 to 100 people, something like that. But there weren't too many clashes. They were pretty easygoing, like in terms of what the parents wanted versus what we wanted. I only really had a few things that I pushed for, like the music and the venue. And aside from that, I was like, if you guys want to take away all the minor details, because there are so many minor details that go into these kind of things, I was like, I'm happy to lose control on those.
Yeah. And like, what were your favorite bits about your wedding? Because obviously it wasn't that long ago, so hopefully it's still fresh in your mind.
Yeah, of course. So I think that the Jewish ceremony is a really, honestly, like a special moment, but there's a few things that go into that that are really exciting. So firstly, like there's a custom before the wedding that you don't see your wife for up to a period of 7 days. We did about 4 days, and we even decided to cut all communication. So there was no texting, there was no calling. We wrote a few letters to each other, you know, something sweet like that.
I like that. That's very old school, isn't it? Yeah, that's really.
Yeah, people do that for up to a week. I don't think we could have hacked a week.
Sometimes, like in our culture, enough. We sometimes do that as well. So they tie something on the guy, and then like the guy and the girl obviously don't see each other because there's a lot of festivities anyway on each side, isn't there? So that's really interesting.
Yeah, and what makes that really exciting is, I mean, again, there are a few ways of doing this, but we have this thing that before the actual ceremony begins, it's called the kind of bedeckin, where the groom kind of gets danced into the room where the bride
that,
is,
that,
and the women
the exact
are kind of waiting.
Same. Yeah,
is it?
Like an entrance with music and colours, and it's really nice.
Exactly. Like you're both in your like your own separate rooms. All the men are kind of like dancing around.
Yeah.
All the women are dancing around with the women, and then they kind of come together. And like I saw, obviously, my wife Rebecca for like the first time in 4 days, saw her in her wedding dress. You can say it's kind of intense because like 200 eyes on you.
Your father-in-law in the background as well.
you get lost in the moment, don't you? And it's a really nice and special moment. I can't remember the exact reason why we do it. I think that partly is like in the Bible, there's this story of, I think, like a mismatch in wives, like a sister gets given instead of the other sister. In the story of Rachel and Leah and Jacob. So I think like you're meant to check under the veil to be like,
it's the correct person. I think that's right similar person. When we have the, you know, on the mandap and there's like a cloth, and as the bride walks down, the groom can't see her. And then when she gets sat, then they then reveal the cloth. So it's at that point that he actually gets to see her for the first time and check is the right person.
it's hilarious how many similarities there are across all different religions. But yeah, that's really exciting. And you kind of don't really know what to do for like the next 5-10 minutes because all the guests go off to like sit down in the room where the ceremony is taking place. And you two are like, all right, I'll see you, like, you know.
No, it's like, are we definitely doing this?
I don't know what you guys call it. It's like the stand where you get married under. We call it the chuppah, I suppose.
We call it the mandap.
Yeah.
There you go. And then, you know, it's kind of like, then you start the whole procession, because, like, as much as, like, there is, like, the Jewish part, I suppose, have, like, living in England and having generations in England, there's a lot of, like, the way that the cultures get meshed together. So there's a whole, like, the way that there's a procession where, you know, bridesmaids walk in and all, like, the family walk in one by one.
That's really nice. That's really nice. Like, we,
so that aspect, I suppose, is less Jewish but more English, but it's a really nice moment as well.
Do you do, I have to ask this because we were discussing this off air, do you do the chair thing? The chair.
Oh, the chair thing.
Yeah, can you explain what it is? Because I'm really intrigued.
I'm happy to say goes across every sect of Judaism. Right. Liberal, reform, okay, the chair gets involved. The chair thing is, I don't know where it comes from, but it's just during the dancing. So in more religious dancing ceremonies, well, the party part, and this did happen at our wedding, the men and women dance separately for a first, like the first few rounds of dancing. And there's a, like a kind of like a split down the middle. If you're more religious, this will be like a solid wall where you can't see like the other sex. In ours, it was like a little flowery thing where, like, you know, it was more of a symbol than an actual physical wall. And so, like, the bride and groom will be lifted up on chairs so they can kind of, like, see each other over the wall.
That's nice.
Like, over the fence.
Hold hands and dance together, and then they're thrust up. It's quite dangerous, I have to be honest.
No,
unless
honestly,
you know what you're doing.
I've seen the videos. I'm like, are you not terrified you are going to fall off
especially
this chair?
Like,
or like, especially for the girls who are wearing bigger dresses. Like, the men underneath the chairs have to be quite strong.
Probably struggling as well.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I've been under the chair more times than I've obviously been on the chair. I've done it with a bad shoulder. It is hard. And it doesn't matter if they're heavy or not. Because you're trying to, like, balance this person. There's four of you, one on each leg. It's dangerous and it's always tilted forward. There's my tip. If you ever get lifted on a chair, it's always going to tilt forward. So lean back as hard as
we
you
don't
can.
Do chairs. We just put people on our shoulders, don't we?
I'm going to make chairs
we
a thing.
Yeah, that's it.
Shoulders is way safer. Yeah. Shoulders is way safer. Unless you're like, you've got like a bigger bridal groom and you've got to get them on your shoulder and you're like, big score, everyone. This is what we go to the gym for.
No, that sounds amazing. I really hope I get invited to a Jewish wedding soon, Gabriel.
I'd say I'd invite you to mine, but I don't think we really begin.
When you renew your vows, when you renew the vows, two invites over this way. Right?
That wedding was too expensive. We're not doing that. Honestly.
And like last and final question, because obviously you are a content creator and you had a wedding last year. Is it something that you wanted to share, like as part of your content publicly, or is that kind of a part of your life that you thought, actually, this is a really private moment and I don't really want to share it on a public platform? Like, what's your view on that and weddings?
I don't know, it's quite a weird one. I've never really thought too deeply about sharing private and personal life. Like, I know that, like, my wife's actually appeared in some of my content at times, not often, like I'd say like once in a blue moon she appears in it. And then in terms of sharing things from the wedding, I didn't feel any pressure, let's put it that way, to share things. I know obviously people like to know everything about the creator they're following and really get every aspect of it. And I'm sure, like, I think I shared my wedding trailer, for example, once that was put out on it. But in terms of like the day itself and the aftermath, I don't really think that I was even thinking about content as a whole, full stop. My full mindset shift was just, you know, enjoying the moment, enjoying being present, you know, for once turning off my phone, being away from my phone. I didn't actually touch my phone on the day of my wedding itself. For the week afterwards, again, in Judaism, you might have, I don't know if there's something similar, but like you continue the kind of celebrations for the week afterwards where like every evening, like you go out with a different group of people that were at the wedding. So like, it'd be like my side of the family's friends. Then it'll be like her side of the family's friends. Then it'll be like our friends. Then it'll be like our grandparents' friends, all somewhat like a different kind of meal and doing something to celebrate as well. So it's all about staying in the moment for as long as you can. It wasn't that I didn't or did post. I think I was just not really caring about content at that point.
Just a question to you both as content creators though. Do you feel like when you do post a little bit about your private life or your personal life, that's the post that kind of gets more? So when you do kind of include your wife in the post, or when you do include your kind of soft, hard launch debate, right, in the thing, is that the post? Because I've even, the one or few times I do post, when I do personal stuff, it gets so much more engagement. Isn't that frustrating as well?
Yeah, people really love the pride, don't they?
Oh, they're people are nosy. So nosy.
We're nosy.
Honestly.
We're nosy.
People are so nosy. So yeah, the moment that I think Rebecca gets into any post, I think that, Rebecca being my wife, I feel like, I don't know if I mentioned that already, Not just a random one.
Call Rebecca.
The moment that I stick her in anything, yeah, the likes go up, the comments go up. Maybe it's because like my friends get more involved in my posts and that pushes it kind of thing. But yeah, I 100% see the correlation between the more personal I get,
yeah,
the more engagement I get.
Oh yeah, I can relate totally. Like if I share any part of my family or friends, like the views, the likes, everything goes up. But I think what Gabriel said about kind of like setting those boundaries and when you're having something that is more personal, being present, especially in this day and age, like it's so hard because as a content creator, your life is content. So everything you do, everywhere you go, whenever you're with people, there is that element in the back of your head being like, I should be making some form of content. If you're able to set the boundary and like actually be present in the moment, it's so important. So I feel like everyone needs to take a leaf out of that, especially during a wedding.
Yeah. But okay, let's talk on that then. Let's talk about influencer weddings, because there is a lot, like, you know, you two being content creators, you might get some endorsements here or include that, and then you kind of lose aspects of your wedding, I feel. But then also you've got to put, but then the audience want to see that, right, as well. So how would you navigate that?
I always think, especially in like Indian weddings, I don't know if it's the same for you, Gabriel, but there are so many kind of suppliers that exist online that if I really wanted to, I could probably get my entire wedding sponsored, right? Yeah. Hair, makeup, outfits, venue, DJ, everything I could. But then what comes with that is then the pressure to post about it or to, you know, on the wedding night, create content. And so for me, I would rather do it how I want to do it, pay the money and then just enjoy it and not have any worries to do something in return for those suppliers.
But just on that, obviously there's that whole cake debate. Have you heard about the birthday cake debate with the Coronation Street actress?
No.
And
no.
She wanted to get, so she got, she's doing her 40th birthday and she got a cake brand to do it for free in return for an OK magazine spread and in term of like social media posts. And then the brand comes go, we're a small business, we deserve to be paid, and outed her.
Yeah.
So obviously you get that backlash now because independent businesses do want, you know, to be rewarded for their, you know, in terms of money. So yeah. How do you feel about that?
I think like if it's a collaboration and it's mutually beneficial, it's up to you whether you want to do that on your wedding. I don't know what you think, Gabriel, but at the
I
same
feel like
time,
we've discussed this before, haven't we?
Yeah.
Candy?
Like,
I mean, firstly, whenever you do any kind of partnership collaboration, make the terms very clear. Make sure you really know there shouldn't be any backlash. That kind of shouldn't be coming off the back of it because they should know. There should even be a contract or a message trail, something like that. So if someone starts to make these claims, you got it covered. But yeah, to answer your question before, as lovely as it would have been to have everything free, and don't get me wrong, these thoughts did go through my mind. Like, do you think we could just like do a little
collab?
Yeah. To work with the, you know, on the wedding day itself. I was like, no way. Like, you can't have that pressure in the back of your mind thinking, I need to do a post, or having someone even at your wedding thinking they need to do all the posts and stuff like that and share it specifically. You want that day to really be away from content, focused on, you know, you, your partner, your family, your friends, having such a good time, that there are enough pressures at a wedding itself.
Yeah.
I'm sure that this crosses across all religions and all cultures. Like the day itself, that you as the bride and groom need to have zero to do but to focus on each other. So if a brand wants to, you know, just like give you the cake for free and then they're like, no pressure on the other side of it, you don't need to post anything like that, for example, that's maybe aside,
you do feel like you'll feel bad, wouldn't you, if you didn't?
Bad.
You feel really bad if you didn't, right? So, yeah.
But on the flip side, like, I would be like, you know what? Let's just sort it ourselves. Let's have our own wedding day where we can have our own time, whatever, etc. Having said that, I'm sure there's a number that none of us would turn down.
What is the number, guys? What is the number?
Well, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Right, so final question for you both. Okay, so what would be, if you could attend any dream wedding that's been like done or any celebrity's wedding, what one would you like to be in attendance for? Like anyone that's happened?
That's a great question. Well, I've got an upcoming one. I'm represented by the same agency as Tommy Fury and Molly May. And I think Tommy's represented by my agent as well.
Yeah.
So I've got a feeling, based on the engagement alone and the details I've heard about that from my manager, that's going to be an unbelievable wedding.
Okay, we need to get you back on after that.
Yeah, if you get a plus one to that, Gabriel, I know who, like, you better be taking me. I think mine is...
We won't take Rebecca.
No.
Rebecca's had enough air time.
Rebecca loves me, she'll understand. I think for me, it's a wedding that's already happened, but it's the Sophia Richie wedding.
Which one?
Sophia Richie.
Okay.
Unbelievable wedding. It was so classy. It was like in the chateau in France. That's like my dream wedding. So if I could just attend as a guest, because I'm absolutely no way going to be able to afford that kind of wedding, then I would have loved that. So that probably was my dream wedding.
I fully realised that I missed a trick there when you said the dream wedding you want to attend. I should have just said my own, right?
Yeah.
Best day of my life. I can't be beaten by anyone.
Rebecca, look there. He said it. He said it's the best day of his life. All right. Brilliant. Look, thank you for joining us, Gabrielle.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been so fun to talk all things wedding with you. And I feel like I've learned about the Jewish culture more and Jewish weddings as well. So, yeah, so many
similarities.
Absolute
pleasure. Final thing is just to get you two to a Jewish wedding, right?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. But we want to be on the chairs just randomly as well. Just two random people just on the chairs. We just want to experience it.
The first time a non-bride and groom has appeared on the chair.
We'll do it.
We sponsor the chairs.
Oh, thanks so much, Gabrielle. I'm sure we'll speak to you soon.
Nah, thanks for having me, guys.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye. That was interesting. That was really interesting.
Yeah, that was. I feel like there's so many similarities between 100%. Indian and Jewish culture.
And I feel like just going to hearing about each other's weddings, you can learn a lot about, you know, what's relevant, what's kind of not, and what's... Yeah, it's just interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and I also feel like there's two types of people when it comes to weddings, especially people who've already got married. One who absolutely hated it because they were so stressed about planning and couldn't enjoy the moment and couldn't spend any time with family and friends. And people like Gabriel who just made sure they were present and enjoyed it. And that's such a reminder to anyone who might be planning a wedding or looking to get married soon. Like, the whole point of a wedding is to enjoy it and live in the moment and be happy that you're marrying your life partner. So, like, I feel like we forget that in the world of social media. Like, we forget that's the whole point.
Yeah,
of a
it is. It does get consumed, doesn't
it?
And then you feel like if you invite loads of people, I'm kind of more on small wedding side now.
Yeah, we're going to convince you by the end of this show. Like, you know what you're going to want to do after this.
There you go. Right, let's move on to our next segment, Agony Aunt and Uncle. I'm going to say Agony Aunt and Uncle. Agony Aunt and Uncle. We're going to do this. So this is the part of the program where we answer your questions about the topics we have covered this week. You can get in touch by emailing cultureclash@foobarradio.com or by tweeting at foobarradio. So Tanvi, are you ready for the first one?
I'm ready.
Right. Josh has emailed in to ask, hi, Juggy and Tanvi. I just proposed to my girlfriend. Congratulations.
Congrats.
And we are starting to plan our wedding. We want a small ceremony with just immediate family and friends. However, my fiance comes from a big family and her mum has asked that the entire family is invited as it's such a big occasion. What do you think I should do? My fiance and I really don't want to have a big event, but she's reluctant to confront her mum on the topic.
Juicy and also a very, very common problem to have. I can talk from experience on this one, actually. Not obviously my wedding, I'm not married, but my brother, he got married last year, and him and his my now sister-in-law, they were in the exact same predicament where both parents, as loving and supportive as they are, they had a really long guest list and they really wanted to invite all their family, friends and relatives. So what they did was kind of find a middle ground where for the actual ceremony, it was really small and intimate. But because with Indian weddings, you have so many different events, you can almost like invite in drips and drabs people to the different events. And then they did one huge event, which we called the meet and greet, which was basically one massive meal. And you invite absolutely everyone you want to invite. And it kind of ticks off that box for your parents. And that I can remember was about 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And they just had to kind of have a meal and everyone got to meet them once.
But how was having that conversation with kind of your parents?
I think in this day and age, I think parents need to also be a little bit more understanding. Like, the costs aren't the same. You know, even for a venue to invite everyone would be like 3, 4, 5 times the price. And I think they have to be a little bit more understanding to, like, weddings should be for what the couple wants, not necessarily what the wider family does. So I think, like, definitely it's important for her to speak to her mum and have a really honest conversation. But they should also try and understand, like, both points of view.
Yeah, I think, Josh, make sure you're there with your partner, both of you kind of, you know, talking to her parents together. And also, I think one of my friends, he got married last year and he done it as, you know, how many people have they come visit you since COVID?
Yeah.
And how many people have actually visited or checked in? And that can kind of just alienate a lot of the guest list.
Look, if someone hasn't WhatsApped me in the last 12 months, they are not getting an invite to my wedding.
I'm going to make sure. Camby, how you doing? You all right?
No, but genuinely, I think in certain cultures, because families are so big, there are kind of relatives that you've never met before, yeah, or you haven't met in about 20 years. And I personally find it really hard to come to terms with having someone like that at my wedding, yeah, when I have no relationship with them. Yeah. But at the same time, if they are close with my parents, you also, like,
I want to respect that, don't you?
Yeah, I want to respect my parents. They've done so much for me, and I would want to give back in that sense as well. So it's all about finding the balance.
Yeah, I think, like, that's how I'll do it. I'll do, like, a pre-wedding, get my parents to, like you did with the meet and greet your family did, kind of get everyone that needs to be there done, out of the way. And then for your actual wedding day, you can just, you tick that box for everyone, and then just find a happy medium, Josh. And if you do a big wedding, me and Tambi have turned into wedding crashers. We're trying to get invites to every wedding. So just add us to the guest list, yeah?
We'll start doing this show from people's weddings.
Yeah, oh, that'd be amazing. Do you know what I mean? Right, the second one is Kashana asks, I'm Jamaican and my fiance is white. I've always dreamed of getting married in Jamaica as a lot of my family are still based out there. And yeah, she's always has envisioned it as the perfect destination. However, her fiance is against the idea as he's always dreamed of getting married in a local church where his parents had their first wedding. They're quite religious. So this has become a massive issue for them. And every time we discuss it, we end up fighting.
Because ultimately, like, you're marrying someone and you want them to have their dream wedding, but you also want to have your dream wedding. And if you don't agree on that, obviously you can get a bit awkward, but I feel like we can take a leaf out of the earlier segment and, like, why can't you have two kind of ceremonies, right? One that is something in the local church, and then you can go to Jamaica with your family and have your dream. I think the other thing with destination weddings is that maybe not everyone can attend, so it's always nice to do something here as well, because you might have older relatives or people that can't afford to fly, so you probably will want something here anyway, so maybe make that kind of the church wedding that he wants.
Yeah, what I will say though, abroad weddings, my cousin got married in Lisbon last year.
Yeah.
And it just clicked. I wasn't too sure about it, you know, there's expenses involved and everything, but, like, they invited everyone and only the people that actually wanted to be there were there. So you're alienating a lot of people in a good way. And, like, the people that were there, everyone was on the dance floor. You didn't have that table that was sitting there. So you felt like you catered for the right people and it made the money kind of worth it.
Yeah, I think if you can afford to do both, do it.
Yeah.
But absolutely, destination weddings are so dreamy. And like you said, no one's going to hop on a plane, pay for a flight and a hotel if they don't care and love you.
Yeah.
So it does cut out a lot of the crap.
But I do get the religious element. Like, you know, I would personally want to get married in a temple, a Sikh temple here. Because obviously, like you mentioned, I have got old relatives and I want them to be there. But then, you know, my cousin got married in a Sikh temple abroad.
Yeah.
And you know, my nan and granddad, like, they zoomed in and
technology, you're so right. Like, people can just follow, like, an online stream, or it can be recorded and you can get them involved after. Like, there's so many ways you can integrate people if you do want a destination wedding.
Yeah.
But I think it is about making sure, like, both parties are happy, because you don't want to, you know, fly everyone to Jamaica and then in 10 years time he resents you for, like, not having his dream wedding or pleasing his family as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's hard because there's so many people involved in decision making for weddings. But try and find something that makes everyone a little bit happy.
Yeah, I think the happy medium. I think just airing it out. Everyone, just you two sitting together.
I think that's a really bad idea.
No, but just them two in between themselves. Like, okay, what are the pros? What are the cons? How do we kind of compromise? Mm. And then go into their families going, right, this is what we've decided.
Exactly. Once you've made the decision yourself, you don't ask for exterior opinions. You just say, like, this is what's happening. This is where you need to be and when. Would love for you to be there. And if not, then we'll celebrate in our own way at another time. But I really think, yeah, you're right. It's important that you have the communication with your partner and you make those decisions in private. Because the minute other people's opinions get involved, that's when things can obviously go down the drain.
There you go. I hope that helps, Kashana. I hope that helps. And once again, once the wedding does go ahead, we're here.
I'd love to be in Jamaica.
That'd be good, wouldn't it? So tell us, we've got a little bit more time. Tell us about what's your kind of dream wedding? I hope your partner is listening and I'm taking notes.
Like, I have saved so much inspo from TikTok and Instagram of, like, all these incredible weddings. I have no idea. Like, at this point in my life, I have no idea what I want other than it to just be really intimate, really small, romantic, and something that my family and friends will walk away from being like, that was just magical. Yeah. And that's all I want. I don't want kind of something that's showy and flashy.
Do you remember Peter Andre and Jordan's wedding, like back in the day?
That's my generation, Jackie.
Yeah. No, but look, they were on a coach. They were on like a horse and carriage. Like it was just really cheesy, but like, everyone was like, and David Beckham and Victoria, all them like, yeah. They're very extravagant.
And that's the thing, a part of me feels like because you're in the public eye, you have a pressure to share all these elements to your wedding and it be like so aesthetic for social media. But I think when it comes down to it, like that's just not important to me. And I just want something that I'm going to remember and look back on and it be so intimate and special for me and my partner.
Okay, so numbers, what kind of numbers? Ideally, like
look,
if you could just go into
it. In an ideal world, yeah. I would have less than 100 people. Oh, wow. The problem is I have a lot of friends and I have a lot of family. So maybe in the next 5 years, we're slowly going to have to wean some of them out. My first cousins alone is like 40 people.
Yeah.
Like with their plus ones.
So then you've got 10 more above that.
And then that's it. So I have more than 10 friends. So that's going to be a problem. So I think naturally I probably will end up having a bigger wedding. But I definitely want to make sure everyone that's there is someone that I know on a personal level.
And would you do abroad?
Absolutely. I think destination.
Oh, really?
I think just you can't trust the weather in the UK. So if I can go somewhere that is guaranteed to be sunny and a nice destination that's affordable for everyone, not too far, then I would. My issue is how on earth do you plan a wedding that's not in the same country as where you live? I always wondered that.
Yeah, it's hard. You have to go a lot of back and forth. You just need a decent wedding planner.
That's what a lot of people said. My cousin got married in Paris a couple of months ago.
Oh, nice.
And it was the most incredible wedding I've ever been to. But they just had a wedding planner do everything. And they actually enjoyed the day.
That's
and
good.
And yeah, so that was, I definitely want to take a leaf out of that.
Yeah, that's a luxury. But if you can afford that, that's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, if you can do that. But would you go back to the motherland and do a wedding there?
Do you know what? I think Indian, like, weddings in India are amazing and they look incredible.
Priyanka Chopra done it, didn't she?
Yeah, that looked absolutely insane. The thing is, I don't have any family in India.
Okay.
So for me, I wouldn't know where to start. I wouldn't know who to help contact me, venues, nothing. A lot of my family are in East Africa now, so in Kenya and Tanzania. So maybe Kenya, but I still think it's probably a little bit far for people from the UK to travel. So no, I probably wouldn't. Would you do a wedding in India?
Do you know what? I would consider it. I've got a lot of family there, though, so I would know, like, the contacts. And it just, if I want to do it big, it actually saves, like, that whole kind of inviting people there. You cut out all the people that don't want to come. There's, like, celebrations for a week, and it's just more open, I feel like. You know, they're very kind of big there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in India, if there's a wedding going on, you just be like, anyone who's on the street, just come in.
Just
like,
come.
Everyone's welcome. And I love that idea. But not for me.
You know, even they do the juggle ceremony. So the juggle ceremony is where the boy side versus the girl side, and you put the kind of little
the pots
on your head. You got the lights, and we do that around the whole villages. So everyone joins in the ceremony, and that's kind of a way of including everyone. They come, join in, do a bit of Indian dancing. Are you a good Indian dancer?
Oh my god, I can't dance to save my life.
Can you not? Can you not bust out the gidda?
No. I've only learned from attending my friends' Punjabi weddings, right? I've been to like 5 Punjabi weddings now, and oh my god, they're the best. They're best parties ever. But no, I just have to like copy what they're doing, and I probably still look like really awkward in the corner, like hoping that no one comes and like gives me their like the pot to put on the head. Yeah. Great fun, but oh my god, I can't do it myself.
There you go. And so no light bulbs for Tanvi. No light bulb dancing.
No. I'm always that awkward one in the corner that will like be getting the party started, but then when it comes to getting on the dance floor, I have to have a few drinks down me before I get there. Yeah.
And would you keep it like traditional? Like, would you keep it like some elements of like?
I think it's really important to have the traditional elements that matter, but also to educate people who don't know about the culture, because I've got such a wide range of friends. I'd want like whoever it is, like the priest, to speak in both languages, to explain why we're doing something. Like, there's so many little traditions in Indian weddings, and I would love people who aren't Indian who are there to know, like, oh, that's cool. Like, why are they doing that? What does it mean? So I think, yes, I want to keep traditions in, but I also want them to be like accessible so that everyone can understand what's going on.
Okay, so I hope your partner's taking notes of this.
Yeah, oh my god, he should be.
Listen, it's all outlined here, right? I'll just direct him to this episode. But look, we want to thank our guests for appearing on the show, and obviously thank you, Tanvi.
Thanks, Jackie. Yeah. I've loved talking about the weddings today.
So next week, we're going to be talking everything living abroad, careers. We've got all that coming up in the next couple of weeks. So it's all exciting, different topics each episode. And if you have any questions for our Agni Aunt and Uncle segment, you can email cultureclash@fubarradio.com or tweet us at fubarradio. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. And we'll see you next week. Bye.